Coming up is the news.
Iran says it strongly opposes any geopolitical change in the Caucasus region and considers it as a red line. A Palestinian youth is killed and three others are injured in an attack by Israeli forces on the occupied West Bank city of Jenin. Also coming up, Liz Truss resigns as British Prime Minister only 6 weeks after taking office. The opposition Labour Party calls for an immediate general election. Thank you for joining us. In our top story this hour, Iran's Foreign Minister Hossein Amir Abdollahian has warned against any geopolitical change of borders in the Caucasus region, calling it a red line for the Islamic Republic. Amir Abdollahian made the remark while meeting with his Armenian counterpart Ararat Mirzoyan in Yerevan. He said the security of Armenia is the security of Iran and the region as a whole. He also hailed the progress in Tehran-Yerevan relations. During Amir Abdollahian's trip, Iran's consulate general was reopened in the southeastern Armenian town of Kapan. The top diplomat also pointed to tensions between Azerbaijan and Armenia, saying the military conflicts between the two caused concerns in the region. He added the Caucasus region is going through a sensitive period, and there's need to respect the territorial integrity of countries. Yerevan and Baku remain engaged in the decades-long dispute over the Nagorno-Karabakh region. Iran says there is no legal ground to link a UN Security Council resolution endorsing the 2015 deal to allegations that Russia uses Iran-made drones in the Ukraine war. Iran's ambassador to the UN, Saeed Iravani, made the remarks in a letter to the Secretary General after Ukrainian officials called on the world body to inspect downed drones in the country. Kiev accuses Tehran of violating UN Security Council Resolution 2231 by providing Russia with drones, a charge Tehran denies vehemently. Iravani rejected Kiev's allegations as unfounded and a misrepresentation of the UN resolution. He said an embargo on Iran's arms exports under the resolution expired in October 2020. He also noted that the arms restrictions applied to the transfer of missile technology designed to be capable of carrying nuclear warheads. Iravani also called on the UN chief not to allow any abuse of the resolution for the sake of the war in Ukraine.
Iran has doubled down on its earlier stance that it has not supplied weapons to Russia to be used against Ukraine. Foreign ministry officials say those claims are untrue and based on false information. Tehran says the accusations are part of a propaganda campaign by the West to stoke tensions with Iran. The accusations against Iran have been leveled by Ukraine and its Western backers. They say Russia has been using Iranian-made drones to strike Ukrainian cities in recent weeks. The Kremlin has also roundly denied the accusation, saying it's using Russia-made weapons in its strikes. Also, some Western media outlets have cited U.S. security officials as saying that more Iranian drones as well as missiles are to be shipped to Russia. But the Pentagon says it cannot confirm those reports. However, it says it will take steps to make the sale of Iranian drones harder. Ukraine has also threatened to cut diplomatic ties with Iran. But Tehran says it holds a neutral stance and believes dialogue is the best way to end the war. Iran has invariably stressed the need for respect for various countries' sovereignty, independence, and territorial integrity, including Ukraine, based on the principles of the United Nations Charter.
The Islamic Republic of Iran has taken a clear and consistent position on the situation in Ukraine, which has been pronounced since the start of the conflict. The Islamic Republic of Iran has always emphasized that all UN members must fully respect the purpose and principles enshrined in the United Nations Charter as well as applicable international law.
The accusations against Iran come amid intensifying tensions at war fronts in Ukraine. Citizens and pro-Russian officials are evacuating from the main city and Kherson region just as Ukrainian forces are pushing to take back the area from Russia. Over 60,000 people will be evacuated within the next 6 days.
Kiev and some of its Western backers accuse Iran of supplying Russia with Gerund 2 drones. Ukraine claims Russia has acquired as many as 2,400 of the UAVs. The West accuses Iran of breaching a UN resolution that placed an arms embargo on Tehran. The embargo expired in 2020, despite Washington's efforts to renew the measure.
The anti-Iran claims first emerged in July. Back then, U.S. National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan alleged that Washington had received, quote, information indicating that Iran was preparing to provide Russia with up to several hundred unmanned aerial vehicles, including weapons-capable UAVs, on an expedited timeline. Flying at low altitude, these unmanned aircraft can evade traditional air defense systems before dive bombing their targets. The distinctive delta wing design of the drones has led Ukrainian and Western officials to claim that they are Iranian Shahed 136 UAVs. Russia's use of the so-called kamikaze drones has sparked panic in Ukraine. The United States, Britain, and France were planning to raise the claim during a closed-door UN Security Council meeting. They accuse Iran of violating a UN Security Council resolution that had placed an arms embargo on Iran. The arms embargo expired in 2020, despite the efforts of former US President Donald Trump to renew it.
Iran categorically rejected unfounded and unsubstantiated claims that Iran has transferred UAVs for the use of the conflict in Ukraine. It is recently disappointing that to pursue their political agenda, these states are trying to launch a disinformation campaign against Iran.
So, dear colleagues, today we have observed another round of the disinformation campaign from the Security Council by the Western delegations, as they raised in the Council the issue of the UAVs allegedly used by Russia in Ukraine. The aim of our Western colleagues is clear. They attempt to hit two targets at once, inventing an artificial pretext to put pressure on Russia and on Iran.
The accusations come amid continued NATO military support for Ukraine. The West is now under fire for fanning the flames of war by sending more and more military hardware there. It's now believed that the accusations made against Iran are part of a larger media campaign against the Islamic Republic. The West, led by the United States, were trying to pressurize Iran by supporting the rioters in Iran during the recent tensions. They imposed a series of sanctions on Iranian officials over human rights allegations. However, they failed to dictate their will on Iran.
Israeli forces have killed yet another Palestinian young man during a raid in the occupied West Bank city of Jenin. The Palestinian victim has been identified as 19-year-old Salah Bariki, who died after being shot in the neck. Three other Palestinians were also wounded after regime forces stormed the center of Jenin and raided several buildings, firing live bullets. Israel has intensified its deadly crackdown against Palestinians across the occupied territories More than 120 people have been killed in Israeli attacks so far this year. And on Wednesday, Israeli forces killed Oday Tamimi, a Palestinian man who carried out a lethal shooting almost 10 days ago at a military checkpoint near El Quds during another operation last night at the entrance of the Maleh Adumim settlement. He clashed with Israeli soldiers before he was gunned down. A general strike across the occupied territories was declared to mourn El Tamimi.
Another Palestinian young man seen by many as a hero and an icon has been killed by Israeli forces during a confrontation in the occupied West Bank. For more than 10 days, the regime's forces had been carrying out a manhunt for Oday Tamimi after he shot at an Israeli military checkpoint at the entrance to his hometown, the Shafat refugee camp in Al-Quds. On Wednesday night, he was gunned down during clashes with Israeli forces at the entrance of an illegal settlement in eastern Al-Quds called Maale Adumim. Hearing a call from Palestinian factions, a general strike has been held in Al-Quds and throughout the occupied West Bank to mourn at Tamimi. The walkout affected all public institutions and private sectors, including schools and businesses. Public transportation was also shut down during the strike.
The general strike prevailing today in the occupied territories is a political message that the Palestinian people are standing behind the resistance option and to assert that they are following the footprints of the martyrs until victory and freedom. It's a message that the Palestinian people will not stand with their hands cuffed in front of the Israeli crimes and that they have the right to resist the occupiers.
Palestinian resistance factions have also urged Palestinians to take to the streets to denounce Tamimi's killing and the aggression by the Israeli regime. Sporadic protests also erupted in several areas of the West Bank. Protesters said they would offer as many martyrs for the sake of Palestine's freedom while fighting the Israeli occupation. They added that more action is required to respond to Israeli atrocities.
We are united as Palestinian people. We continue to prove that we have strength to sacrifice our souls. We are ready to go to direct confrontations to resist the Israeli forces. We stand united behind the resistance, behind the confrontations, behind the martyrs.
Israel's escalating repression during the last month is part of a larger operation to quell the growing Palestinian resistance, particularly armed resistance. Recently, many Palestinian youths are drawn to this kind of resistance, with the newly formed group of fighters known as the Lion's Den as an example. Many might question whether a new uprising against Israel is in the making here in the occupied West Bank and Al-Quds. While the Israeli military is escalating its crackdown against Palestinians and using excessive force to counter the Palestinian resistance, it's obvious that Tel Aviv fears a renewed surge in anti-Israeli operations, especially after a rise in armed attacks against the Israeli regime. Mona Qandil, occupied Al-Bira.
Elsewhere, Britain has returned to rolling political crisis after the current Prime Minister, Liz Truss, announced her resignation Thursday afternoon. The ruling Conservative Party will now enter another leadership race just 44 days after Truss herself was elected to the role. Robert Carter reports from London to bring us the latest and what's going to happen going forward.
Britain has been thrown into another leadership crisis after outgoing Prime Minister Liz Truss announced her resignation after just 44 days in office. Her departure makes Truss the shortest-serving UK Prime Minister in British history and the fourth Tory to head the troubled nation in just 4 years.
I cannot deliver the mandate on which I was elected by the Conservative Party. I have therefore spoken to His Majesty the King to notify him that I am resigning as leader of the Conservative Party.
So now eyes turn towards who her successor will be. The ruling Conservative Party have chosen to ignore opposition calls for a general election.
This cannot continue. Britain deserves better. Britain cannot afford the chaos of the Conservatives anymore. We need a general election now.
The next prime minister is expected to be elected via another internal leadership race within the space of just 1 week. Speculation suggests that past leadership contenders Rishi Sunak and Penny Mordaunt both have their eye on the top job, whilst current Chancellor Jeremy Hunt has ruled himself out of the race. Former Prime Minister Boris Johnson has stunned many with rumours he may attempt to return. Truss's allies claim she stood aside graciously. However, critics believe she should be held accountable for her self-admitted mistakes.
I'm sorry. Liz Truss leaving after just 44 days in power really epitomises the state of the current Conservative Party. Because think about it, if after 12 years of power, yet another Conservative Prime Minister is chased out after being unable to clean up the mess that their party created, well, what does it say about any other potential leadership candidate?
Going forward, it's expected things are going to move very rapidly, with Tory MPs expected to put forward their nominations on Monday, with an election process concluded by Friday the 28th, and with a new Prime Minister in place in time for October the 31st's fiscal statement. However, it's surely going to take much more than a speedy election process to restore the nation's lost confidence in the ruling Conservative Party. Robert Carter, London.
Official data shows that inflation in Japan hit an 8-year high last month amid rising energy costs and the falling value of the yen against the US dollar. The data suggests core consumer prices rose 3% in September, exceeding 2% target set by the central bank. The figure excludes volatile food prices and mainly includes raw materials. Service prices associated with wages were also not seen meaningful hikes. The slump in the currency to 32-year lows is said to be pushing up import costs. The Bank of Japan has attributed the inflation to exceptional events such as the war in Ukraine and the government's ultra-loose policies designed to encourage sustainable growth. The world's third largest economy is heavily dependent on energy imports and buys even other goods, including much of its food, from other countries. That brings an end to our bulletin for this hour. Thank you for staying tuned.
This is IRIB English Radio. With you early in the morning. With you at midday. With you till the night's end. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
Since Russia started its special operation in Ukraine in order to prevent NATO's eastward expansion, the United States and European countries have sent huge amounts of weapons and ammunition to Ukraine. Russia, which has announced that one of its goals of this operation is to save the people of eastern Ukraine from repressions of the Western-oriented Ukrainian regime, has always condemned the West's military aid and says this action will only prolong the war. We have taken a look at some of the world media's coverage of this issue. Please stay with us. Germany's Der Spiegel has more for us. Germany's Defense Minister Alexei Reznikov confirmed the first unit of the country's cutting-edge Iris-T air defense system has arrived in Ukraine. Reznikov wrote on Twitter on Wednesday, 12th of October, a new era of air defence has begun in Ukraine. IRIS-Ts from Germany are already here. The German defence minister noted that Kiev needs more weapons of this kind, arguing that protecting the sky over Ukraine against attacks by Russia is a moral imperative. Several hours later, Germany's defense ministry posted a tweet of its own, stressing that Berlin had kept its word and announced that the first IRIS-T SLM air defense system has arrived in Ukraine. In a follow-up message, ministry officials quoted their boss, Christine Lambrecht, as hailing the shipment as very important support to Ukraine in its fight against missile shelling. The German Chancellor Olaf Scholz made the original pledge back in June, with a shipment initially slated for November. A total of four units made up of a command vehicle, a radar vehicle, and a truck-mounted launcher are scheduled to arrive in Ukraine sometime in 2023. According to media reports, Kiev requested at least a dozen of these ultra-modern air defense systems and offered to purchase them directly from the manufacturer, Diehl Defense of Germany. Meanwhile, Germany's own military has not received a single unit of the ground-based IRIS-T system variant as of yet. This underlines concerns voiced by some German politicians and media outlets that Berlin is seriously depleting its own weapons stockpiles by supplying the hardware to Kiev. Meanwhile, Ukraine had until recently consistently lambasted Germany over its perceived unwillingness to provide heavy weaponry to Kiev. According to former Ukrainian ambassador to Germany, Andrei Melnik, when an effective range believed to be up to 40 kilometers, their defense system is rather expensive. Speaking to Wirtschaftswoche magazine back in June, the diplomat estimated that one such unit could cost about 140 million euros, that is $135.4 million. French broadcaster Entendeur of France 2 says, French President Emmanuel Macron stated Paris will send air defense systems, radars, missiles and weapons to Ukraine in the coming weeks to defend against missile and drone attacks. Emmanuel Macron, whose comments come after Ukraine experienced a wave of Russian missile attacks, claimed on Wednesday, 12th of October, the French supplies would specifically help defeat these kinds of threats. He added that France would deliver the hardware and the necessary training to Ukraine. Ukraine has specifically requested the weapons as a priority. The French president noted that this decision followed an unprecedented phase of bombings that struck Ukrainian cities and infrastructure. Without going into detail, Emmanuel Macron said France was providing military intelligence to Ukraine. He claimed Russia is profoundly destabilized in its capacity to regenerate its arms, its production and industry. Emmanuel Macron also declared, "We are in a hybrid war," he said. "We're not just using weapons on the ground, but using weapons of information," claiming that Russia was using a wide variety of approaches to wage the conflict, including propaganda channels, paying for influence, including on social media sites, weaponizing migration, blackmail and hunger. Questioned on nuclear risks in Ukraine, the French President Emmanuel Macron confirmed that France's nuclear doctrine would not automatically commit to a retaliatory strike if Russia used nuclear weapons in Ukraine. The French President also refused to brand Russia a terrorist state, saying that such labels have little consequences. Macron claimed, "There's one state that's declared war, and that's more than enough." Sky News television channel has more about the same story. Britain's Defence Secretary Ben Wallace stated London will supply Kiev with advanced air defence missiles capable of shooting down cruise projectiles. Ben Wallace also announced a new aid ahead of a two-day NATO meeting in Brussels on Wednesday, 12th of October. The missile authorised for shipment to Ukraine is called the Advanced Medium-Range Air-to-Air Missiles, or AMRAAM. Furthermore, Britain will also be providing Ukraine with hundreds of drones to support its intelligence services and 18 howitzer artillery guns, in addition to 64 already delivered. British Defence Secretary Ben Wallace said these weapons will help Ukraine defend its skies from attacks and strengthen their overall missile defence alongside the US NASAMS, or National Advanced Surface-to-Air Missile System. The United Kingdom has previously supplied Kiev with various weapons, including the Endlaw anti-tank missile launcher. Ukraine's key Western allies gathered in Brussels, Belgium, in order to discuss how to boost support for Ukraine and replenish allies' depleted military stockpiles. They pledged new air defences and more aid on the sidelines of the meeting. The pledges from Paris and London followed similar announcements from United States and Germany recently. Canada also announced it would provide over $47 million Canadian dollars in new military aid to Ukraine, with a package including artillery rounds, satellite communications equipment, winter clothing, and drone cameras. Furthermore, the French Defence Minister, Sébastien Lecornu, told Le Parisien newspaper on Saturday, 15th of October, President Emmanuel Macron has backed a proposal to train a large number of Ukrainian soldiers in France. He said the president has approved a training plan that will allow up to 2,000 Ukrainian soldiers to be welcomed in France. Sébastien Lecornu added, "They will be assigned to our units for several weeks," adding that military training for the use of Caesar howitzers had previously been offered to Ukrainian soldiers. Lecornu said, "But now it's a change of scale."
Food for thought.
Hello everyone, and let us contemplate on a wise aphorism from Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib, peace be upon him, the vicegerent of Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny. If you want to pray to Allah for better means of subsistence, then first give something in charity.
This is IRIB English Radio.
Thank you.
please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
This is A to Z. An introduction into an Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, faithfulness to the promise and covenant. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In today's lesson, we will talk about the topic of being faithfulness to the covenant and the promise in the Islamic lifestyle. We know that Islam pays attention towards the faithfulness. It wants justice in the society. And one of the necessities of justice is that when we promise someone, when we have a covenant with someone, when we have a treaty with someone, we must be faithful to those covenants, to those promises, to those treaties. And this is very important that in Islam, we must take care of all things. Because if I am not faithful to the promise that I made to someone, to the covenant that I made with someone, if I'm not faithful with that, then obviously I cannot apply justice in the society. Therefore, when we talk about the justice in the society as a main theme, which has been brought by Islam, and Islam focuses on the justice, therefore it is necessary to be faithful to the promise that I have made. And this brings the humanity a level up. It brings the society a level up. In the society where people are faithful to their promises, where people are faithful to their covenant, the others can trust on them. It increases the trust of the people. It increases the nobility of the people, that when such people have made a promise and they are faithful to that, then obviously everyone can rely, they can trust. And this is important, and this is what the prophets used to teach and used to preach amongst the nations. Welcome back. You're listening to A to Z from IRB English Radio. We were talking about the topic of being faithful to the promise and covenant in the Islamic lifestyle. We know that when a person is not faithful to the promise that he has made, generally the public, they think that he has done something bad. And he has committed something which he should not be committing, or maybe he has performed a kind of injustice. And therefore, we think that this is a bad deed, this is a bad action, that when you have promised someone, you should be faithful, you should fulfill the promise that you have made. On the other hand, if there is a person who basically fulfills the promise that he has made, we trust him. And we like such people. Therefore, even when we are talking about the relation of the parents and the kids, you know, sometimes when the kids are making noise, sometimes we promise them and we say them that if you do not make a noise, then, for example, I will buy an ice cream for you, I will give you such a gift, or maybe a sweet or a toffee or chocolate or something like that. But later, when we do not give them, when we do not fulfill our promise to our kids, the next time, even our kids, they don't trust us. And in reply, they say that last time you said so, but you never gave us, you never fulfilled your promise. Therefore, Islam, even in the family life, in the social life, in relation between the father or mother, or maybe like the kids or the grandparents or the family, the relations in the society, for example, with the neighbors, with the society, the work, in every single aspect of the life, Islam says us to be faithful, to remain faithful with the promise that we made so that the trust is being made amongst the people. Thanks for listening. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Thanks for listening to A to Z from IRB English Radio. For more information, visit our website at parstoday.com/Ian Call of Islam page. Till another episode, God bless you all. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Cultural news, social news, scientific news, artistic news. With delight.
If you have a sweet tooth, then this next bit of news is just for you. Visitors are now taking advantage of the expanded version of Cakeland, which is an immersive art gallery in the U.S. city of Los Angeles. The structure is meant to feel like a giant multi-layered cake. It's entirely made of artificial materials, but looks like if it's full of cherries, whipped cream, and layers of cake. Artist Scott Hoff says he used nearly a ton of pipe frosting, 120 mirrors, and thousands of cherries. Plus, he embedded thousands of crystals in the walls as a final touch. The artist says he chose to develop Cakeland after he noticed how much his artificial cake sculptures were welcomed by viewers.
So I chose cake because, number one, it's really beautiful. Number two, it's really fun to do. And number three, it engages the viewers in such a meaningful way.
Hoff says he never actually made a real cake before and has mainly followed his enthusiasm for fake food as the inspiration for this project. Visitors are able to walk through the cake, a labyrinth, and explore various rooms. While there is a lot of deliciousness and lightness of the cakes, visitors to this cake land can discover some interesting darker elements as they wander around. The art installation has continued to expand since it was founded by Hov in 2020. England's Paradise Wildlife Park welcomes its new guest, an endangered red panda cub. The mother, Tilly, gave birth to the cub just 1 month after she lost her breeding partner, Nampang. Experts say Tilly had been under a breeding project for 4 years. The cub has been named Little Red, and his birth is being celebrated as a, quote, symbol of hope. Red pandas are classed as an endangered species and are on the red list of the International Union for Conservation of Nature. The bushy-tailed bamboo munchers dwell in high-altitude Asian forests, and their population is now fewer than 2,500. Robots are slowly but surely becoming part of everyday life, taking on human roles in different areas. Now, fast food restaurants can make French fries faster and better as a robot called Flippy 2 takes over the job.
When an order comes in through the restaurant system, it automatically spits out the instructions to Flippy. Takes a frozen product, fries it for the precise amount of time, and puts the finished product in the end. It does it faster, more accurately, more reliably, and happier than most humans do it.
Flippy 2 has been created in a robotic lab in California called MISO after 5 years of efforts by its developers. According to the project engineers, a really good understanding of the food science is needed to make sure the food quality is there, how different food sticks together, and how the temperature and heat affect it. The MISO CEO says the machine can cook several meals with different recipes simultaneously, removing the need for catering staff.
This technology utilizes a whole bunch of computer vision. There's cameras throughout the system, including right here we have these food identification cameras. The cameras not only guide the robot and tell it exactly where it is in space and how to move through this area, but also identifies the food type and it knows the recipe for each one.
The MISO CEO says tasks like the fry station are the kind that humans are most happy to offload. The name Flippy comes from the original machine designed to flip burgers, which was not very useful for restaurants. A celebrated Chinese artist integrates his life experiences and the beauty of his homeland using his own distinctive style of traditional painting. Chen Jialing is known for his Chinese ink paintings. Chen brings to life the imaginative richness and culture through his depictions of landscape with every brush of color. He is most famous for breaking traditional painting techniques while staying within the framework of the art form. Chen says one of his favorite subjects is the Jianggong Mountains, especially during certain hours when the sunlight offers its own visual delights.
The composition of this painting is based on the main peak of the Jianggong Mountains, because the main peak is the most majestic and imposing, especially at noon. The sun shines on the trees, forming a contour light involving trees and the large mountains, which is extremely beautiful.
The 85-year-old artist has also used fused traditional landscape painting with modern technology. Though Chen has participated in numerous art exhibitions, but he says his first solo exhibit was held in his 70s, and that's when his career really took off. Chen says he plans to paint as much of his homeland's stunning scenery as possible during his lifetime.
The Light is a bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
Freedom is an essential virtue that is valued not only by humans but animals as well, just like two eagle owls that have been released into the wild after being born in a Madrid zoo. The two owl twins were freed after months of training to survive in the nature. First, they were taken to a big aviary to develop the necessary skills, including those for hunting prey. The aviary is designed to have a similar environment to the local mountain range. Meantime, they need to gain muscle and come to a suitable weight. After passing various skill tests, the owls are released as part of Madrid Zoo's breeding program of night birds of prey. 7 eagle owls and 11 barn owls have been released since the program was launched in 2017. However, some of them flew back seeking shelter as they failed to adapt to the nature.
Art
restoration requires intensive research and training and loads of skill. But imagine the anxiety while professionals embark on restoring rare paintings. Under careful supervision, French restorers are working to give back to 500-year-old paintings their former glory. They were rescued from a fire that engulfed the Notre Dame Cathedral in Paris in 2019. These works date back from the 17th and early 18th century. The paintings, including 22 with large format, were temporarily stored in a warehouse and now being restored at an undisclosed location. The fire caused strictly no damage to the paintings, but they have accumulated thick layers of dirt and smoke on the surface after hanging in the cathedral for centuries. Some of the works also have paint loss due to overcleaning that restorers say need to be repaired elegantly.
On the outskirts of China's metropolis, Shanghai, a tiny island has been dubbed Cat Island as it provides shelter for stray animals. Since it opened last month, a charity based on the island is taking in cats, mainly brought from Shanghai residents. These small carnivorous mammals are neutered and evaluated, and those with good temper and health are allowed to roam free on the island. The city's Stray Cats Management Center says their trap-neuter-release policy is to protect stray cats, limits their population, and maintain ecological balance. However, Shanghai has an estimated 200 stray cats per square kilometer, which means other methods will be needed to control the urban population, stray cats. A pair of baby panda twins make their debut appearance at the Chongqing Zoo in southwest China, with visitors flocking to cherish the abundance of cuteness.
Our returnee panda, Irshan, gave birth to the twin brother and sister on July 22nd this year. Currently, the elder brother weighs 4.3 grams and the younger sister weighs 0.6 grams. They're in good condition at present.
The twins' first public appearance was on Saturday, the first day of the week-long National Day holidays. During this week, the pair of giant panda cubs will be on display in the nursery of the panda house of the zoo. Their mother, Irshan, once lived in Canada as a goodwill envoy, but returned to her homeland in 2020. This was Irshan's second delivery of twins. A total of 21 pandas currently live in the Chongqing Zoo, which has been breeding giant pandas since the 1960s. The evolution of robots has been one of the fascinations of recent technological developments. And now the most cutting-edge achievements in that department were presented to the public during a conference in Beijing. The four-day annual World Robot Conference was held both offline and online. It featured three major events, including forum, expo, and competition. On display were more than 500 sets of robots from 130 companies from China and abroad. The conference gave an idea of how the future of humanity will be impacted by the automations. It shows how they can contribute to different sectors, from the restaurant industry and medicine to elderly care, agriculture, and manufacturing. An aircraft powered by electricity may still be some way off, but one of its types is already here thanks to a whole range of innovative solutions being developed by aviation firms. American company Aviation Aircraft has debuted its all-electric plane in Washington State.
The aircraft named Alice took off the runway at Grand County International Airport and flew for 8 minutes. It reached an altitude of 3,500 feet before touching down the ground. According to the company, the aircraft produces no carbon emissions, significantly reduces noise, and costs a fraction to operate compared to usual light jets. The company says it continues to develop and tweak the plane's battery system for an hour flight.
We're targeting a design criteria of 35 minutes for a charge. And so that'll be a charge for the typical route length. It's actually, as I just said, it's actually a design point. So going back to the comment I made earlier about designing batteries for aircraft, it's one of the considerations is how quickly do we want it to charge and how much power do you want to be able to draw from it. So again, we're targeting call it 30 minutes of charge for an hour of flight time or about 2C if you're...
The company aims to find its way into the market for trips that sit between 150 and 250 miles, a range that features aircraft similar in size to Alice. It will also be for both commuter and cargo flights. For aircraft manufacturers, this paradigm shift is driving fuel savings in flight and on the ground, reducing carbon footprints and NOx emissions while also improving reliability and cutting maintenance cost. Many people of the world are supported almost completely by animals because they live in areas unsuitable for animal husbandry. But these days, even some city dwellers are making their living out of animals, like a Virginia girl. Andrea Diaz quit her job at a restaurant and started to rent her pet alpacas to cheer up steer crazy Americans during the pandemic. Since the launch of her business in 2020, it has expanded from 2 to 14 alpacas. Interestingly, 5 with fluffy pets are regularly making a paid appearance at birthdays, weddings, restaurants, and offices. She charges a starting price of $95 per hour. Diaz says the best part is when there are kids' birthday parties, but even it's really a fun for the adults. She calls alpacas a good exposure because they attract people.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
In Britain, Prime Minister Liz Truss has warned of tough times ahead after she scrapped her vast tax-cutting plan and said she would carry on to try to put the economy on a stronger footing. She defied calls for her resignation. We take a look at the world media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. British news with The Guardian has more on this story. Liz Truss is facing cabinet unrest over her plans for brutal public spending cuts across all departments after a disastrous mini-budget put major pledges at risk, including the pensions triple lock. The Prime Minister held a 90-minute cabinet meeting on Tuesday, 18th of October, in which he warned ministers that difficult decisions lay ahead. The Chancellor, Jeremy Hunt, told them everything is on the table as he strives to find tens of billions of pounds in savings after ditching Truss's economic plan. Health, education and welfare are among those areas expected to be hit. One Whitehall official said departments were already preparing for cuts significantly higher than previously planned, with Jeremy Hunt's tax U-turns estimated to be set to raise £32 billion, leaving a £38 billion hole in the public finances. Liz Truss remains in a precarious position, having in effect handed power to Jeremy Hunt, with a YouGov poll showing that half of the Conservative members think she should resign. A significant majority would also support a coronation of a new Prime Minister by Tory MPs. Senior ministers are expected to capitalise on Liz Truss's weakness and resist deep cuts, with the Defence Secretary Ben Wallace indicating he would be prepared to quit his job if the Prime Minister does not honour her campaign pledge to spend 3% of gross domestic product or GDP on defence by 2030. She faces a humiliating Prime Minister's questions against Keir Starmer on Wednesday, after one of the most dramatic U-turns in modern times. And No. 10 Downing Street aides are concerned rebel Tory MPs could seize the moment to publicly call for her to go. Asked whether it was no longer a question of whether Liz Truss goes, but when she goes, the former Levelling Up Secretary Michael Gove said, absolutely right. Whitehall officials said planned cuts drawn up before Kwasi Kwarteng was sacked, but now paused, in which departments would make capital savings of 10% to 15% and day-to-day savings of at least 2% were now likely to be more brutal. It is fair to say that things are looking tougher than they were, one said. Every department is going to have to play a role in finding efficiencies. No department will be ring-fenced. Government sources confirmed the existing three-year spending review would not be rewritten, but said savings would be required within that because of inflation. In the next spending round from 2024 to 2025, spending is expected to fall dramatically. Jeremy Hunt told ministers they would be asked to find ways to save money, with a focus on areas that would not affect public services. He will meet each one this week to thrash out figures, which will be submitted to the Office for Budget Responsibility on Friday. Late on Tuesday, The Times reported that Jeremy Hunt is poised to delay Boris Johnson's flagship social care reform and has been warned that his spending cuts may have to be tougher even than George Osborne's era of austerity. The Reuters news agency has also covered the same story. British Prime Minister Liz Truss warned of tough times ahead after she scrapped her vast tax-cutting plan and said she would carry on to try to put the economy on a stronger footing, defying calls for her resignation. After weeks of blaming global headwinds for investors dumping the pound and government bonds, Liz Truss on Monday, 17th of October, said she was sorry for going too far too fast with her radical economic plan to snap Britain out of years of tepid growth. It was not clear whether the apology would quell a growing rebellion in her own Conservative Party, with a handful of lawmakers urging Truss to quit just 6 weeks after she became Prime Minister. Liz Truss has said she will fight on and told her top ministers she wanted to level with the public that there would be tough times ahead. A new YouGov opinion poll showed that even among Conservative Party members who backed her for Prime Minister, more than half of those polled said she should resign. A third wanted her predecessor Boris Johnson to return. Markets, which plunged after Liz Truss's 23rd of September mini-budget, are still under strain, even after her finance minister, Jeremy Hunt, tore up her plans on Monday. "I do want to accept responsibility and say I'm sorry for the mistakes that have been made," Truss told the BBC in an interview on Monday. "I wanted to act to help people with their energy bills to deal with the issue of high taxes, but we went too far too fast." Truss said she was sticking around and that she would lead the Conservatives into the next election due in about 2 years' time, although the statement was accompanied by a laugh. Earlier on Monday, Liz Truss went to the Parliament as Jeremy Hunt ripped up the plan she proposed less than a month ago and which triggered a bond market rout so deep that the Bank of England had to act to prevent pension funds from collapsing. For some in the Conservative Party,